Hello, this is Dr. Mark Rudy, and I'm a psychologist who's here to talk about recovery, and specifically the need to be and feel safe. It is our firm belief that your recovery is apt to be significantly enhanced if you feel safe, and conversely, if you don't feel a sense of security, this is apt to block progress towards recovery. If you are in early recovery, this issue can be especially challenging. You may not feel certain that you can safely trust your own feelings. You may not believe that you can trust your own thinking. You may not be entirely sure that people will be there for you, that the treatment process can be effective, or that we at True Aftercare really give a damn. By the way, we do. Some clients have described early recovery as swimming in chaos. In some ways, it's rather odd that recovery can feel terribly uncomfortable just because it's new. Some clients have described almost a sense of comfort to all the distractions and chaos created by their own dysfunctional behavior. It was familiar territory. In contrast, early recovery may initially feel, well, uncomfortable, unfamiliar, and it may take some time to learn the rules. The really good news is that your brain is now learning new patterns of behavior, and you'll soon have the basis for long-term recovery, provided that you stick with it. Let's think about being safe. Four kinds of safety. First, your physical safety. Clearly, it is not safe to continue any addictive behavior, whether it's drugs, alcohol, gambling, sex, spending, or a host of other compulsive acts. Clearly, it's not safe to continue an abusive relationship, and it's definitely not okay to live in an environment that threatens your welfare. If you're living with your family, in a halfway house, a recovery center, or independently, take a close look at safety issues and talk about any concerns that you may have with your recovery coach or your therapist. Second is mental safety. We can't afford to think about things about ourselves that are just plain wrong. Everyone needs to periodically examine what they believe about themselves and make sure that they're avoiding thoughts that are tormenting. For example, if you think that you have to live a life that is error-free, you're setting yourself up for a world of hurt. Nobody can do that. You may want to strive for excellence, but you also need to accept that to err is human, and you probably need to believe that pretty good is good enough. There are a wide variety of these thinking or belief errors that you may want to consider. Psychologists call these types of thinking errors cognitive distortions. If you have an idea that you just can't get out of your head, talk it over with your coach or your therapist. It just might be one of these cognitive distortions. In another podcast, you probably heard me say that thoughts lead to feelings. Emotional safety is the next kind of safety that we'll briefly discuss. So you can probably assume that thinking the wrong things will lead to feeling uncomfortable feelings. For example, if you believe that anger is so dangerous that it needs to be absolutely avoided, you may feel very uncomfortable with yourself when you experience the emotion of anger. And you'll want to learn that all of our emotions can serve as highly useful signaling devices that provide information about our emotional needs. In the case of anger, it usually lets us and others know that we're dealing with fears, frustration, a sense of hurt, and/or perceived unfairness. If you have some thoughts that are really troubling you, seeing a counselor, psychologist, or psychiatrist would be incredibly useful. You'll want to replace these thinking errors with beliefs you can live with. If anger is a problem, you may want to learn something about boundaries, coping skills, and effective communication to deal with the issues that prompt these uncomfortable feelings. If there's an emotion that troubles you a good part of the time, try to look at the thought or the belief that drives that emotion. The last kind of safety that we'll discuss today is relationship safety. One key part of safety involves the people you elect to hang around with. I sometimes joke that some people have warm, caring relationships, and some people have hostages. If you feel like a hostage, you probably need to question the safety of continuing to associate with one or more people. You may also wish to consider developing some assertiveness skills. Set key boundaries on what you will and will not tolerate, and look for relationships that are more mutually rewarding. If you are working on recovery while a partner is living in his or her disease, something has probably got to give, and we hope that it's not your recovery. If this discussion has prompted your thinking about issues you might want to work on, think about the coping skills that you learned in primary care. Be sure to work on self-care, set appropriate boundaries, eat right, exercise, and be very kind to yourself. You may recall that you learned how to enter a peaceful or meditative state. Many mindfulness and breathing exercises can be incredibly useful. So can yoga. Some coping skills are designed to have you look at a challenging situation from a different and more realistic perspective. Many coping skills are aimed at distracting yourself with either physical activity or a change in thinking so you aren't stuck in negativity. If you do feel stuck, reach out to your recovery coach. Don't hesitate to ask for support. That's what we're here for, and thanks for listening.